Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I'm John Batchelor with visiting with Professor H.W. Brands. His new book is America First, Roosevelt versus Lindbergh and the Shadow of War. Poland's cut up. The people of the bloodlands are massacred. Some of this is known. It's generally understood that the Hitlerites are hostile, but then again, so are the Stalinists. This is a part of the war where Germany and Russia seem to be cooperating. However, watching this from America, FDR knows that he needs to adjust the Neutrality Act. And he's in correspondence with the man who's become the first Lord of the Admiralty again, whom we all know as the hero of the Second War, Winston Churchill. However, the relationship between FDR and Winston Churchill is transactional. They both want something from each other. And they carry on a correspondence beginning 1940, early in 1940, while Roosevelt is trying to convince Congress to let him adjust the Neutrality Act. I'm interested in how Lindbergh was viewing all this. He's visiting with senior members of Congress, some very famous senators, Burton Wheeler, Gerald Nye, Robert Bora himself, for heaven's sakes, you know, the man who connects us to TR. What are the senators telling him? What do they want from him, Professor?
Well, the first thing that they're telling him is don't trust Roosevelt. They didn't trust Roosevelt. They believed that Roosevelt was saying one thing while aiming to do something else. So, upon the outbreak of war, Roosevelt requests that Congress modify the neutrality legislation. I should add here that Congress had passed a series of laws starting in 1935 to prevent exactly those steps that had led gradually the United States into war the first time around. So, for example, selling weapons to belligerents, making loans to the belligerents, American nationals sailing on the ships of belligerents. And each one of those contributed to America's entry into the First World War. So Congress wrote a series of laws saying you can't do that. And so you can't sell weapons to the belligerents because the first go-round during World War I, selling weapons to the British and the French gradually drew the United States into that side. So when Roosevelt speaks about neutrality, at the beginning of the war, this is September 1939, he has no choice. Congress has said the United States is neutral. But what Roosevelt wants to do is to modify the neutrality. Now, he says that he wants to modify the neutrality so that the United States will not have to get involved in the war. He wants the British and the French to be able to defend themselves better than they're doing at the moment. This is what he says, and he makes his case. Lindbergh and the other critics of Roosevelt that you mentioned, they believe that Roosevelt is simply preparing the way for further intervention on behalf of Britain and France. And step by step, they say, and Lindbergh believes, Roosevelt is trying to lead the United States toward this end that he has already determined upon, that the United States, under Franklin Roosevelt's leadership, will step onto the world stage and will establish a new order in Europe. And so every time Roosevelt says, that's not what I'm doing. No, I'm trying to keep the United States out of war. If we send weapons to Britain and France, we won't have to send troops to Britain and France. Lindbergh says, I don't believe it. And the other anti-interventionists, who were all critics of Roosevelt, they were mostly Republicans of the opposite party. And so they didn't trust Roosevelt, and Lindbergh didn't either.
85 years later, we're in a place where we can say they're both right and they're both wrong simultaneously. It's one of the compelling parts of the professor's book. You find statements that you agree with, and then the other side makes a statement you agree with, and you're lost. So imagine being the American people listening to this play out on the radio. All right, we have, again, remarks by FDR associating people who are reluctant to get involved in Europe, at least in terms of providing arms or sustenance to the beleaguered countries that have been attacked by Germany or about to be attacked. He uses the word isolation and he connects it to a plague. he talks about perhaps they're well-meaning, but they're ignorant. In other words, he goes on the attack very early on, the president of the United States. I hesitated, Professor, because one of the laws of politics I remember reading is you never punch down. Roosevelt started punching right away. Does he see Lindbergh as a major threat, as a political threat to him? Does he see Lindbergh as what some members of Congress suggest, a politician who could run for president?
I think that Roosevelt realized that there was sentiment on the Republican side to run Lindbergh against Franklin Roosevelt, perhaps in 1940. He was an attractive young man. He was an appealing candidate. He would have probably made a very plausible candidate. Lindbergh himself wouldn't have anything to do with it. He just said, no, I'm not in for politics. But Roosevelt recognized that even if Lindbergh did not go into politics, he might very well be an opponent, a hindrance to what Roosevelt wanted to accomplish. He understood that Lindbergh had the ear of the American people. There's something else that's really important to keep in mind. When this debate begins, and I do try to frame it as a debate, although Roosevelt and Lindbergh never shared a stage, and it wasn't Roosevelt says something and Lindbergh responds. They actually did it separated by a day or two. Roosevelt would give a speech, Lindbergh would give a speech. Then Roosevelt later would give a speech, Lindbergh would give a speech. So they're setting it up this way. And Roosevelt sort of wants to make sure that Lindbergh is not able to prevent Roosevelt from doing what he wants to do. But Roosevelt begins this debating period really with the odds against him, because on September 1st, 1939, Americans overwhelmingly believed that it would be a mistake for the United States to send troops to Europe again, the way it had the first time around. And so this is what Roosevelt has to deal with. He has to soften that opposition gradually. He, in retrospect, realized that that Woodrow Wilson, the president during World War I, had made a mistake by getting out in front of American public opinion and leading America into war. Roosevelt realized, no, he has to shape American public opinion so American public opinion almost leads him into the war. If he gets too far out in front, then there will be a backlash the way there was against Woodrow Wilson. So Roosevelt really takes his time and allows the opinion to build. At this point, he is casting aspersions on his critics, including Lindbergh, but he's accusing them only of ignorance. Now, later on, he'll malign their motives as well. He thinks that they're well-meaning but wrong-headed, and things will change over time.
Norway ends Chamberlain. Winston Churchill is now prime minister. I said that their relationship is transactional. They want things from each other. Churchill writes, and the professor quotes many of the documents that Churchill sent to FDR that are both pleading and manipulative. It works, but FDR wanted to be convinced. The disaster at Dunkirk is not seen as a victory by Lindbergh. It's seen as, and his supporters in Congress, seen as vindication why we didn't want to get into this. We would have been trapped up against a beach as well. It's important now to note that following the disaster at Dunkirk comes the fall of France, and this is bitter fruit for everyone. Roosevelt watching France fall apart as Britain is retreating to its island, expecting the worst that summer. I note, Professor, that Lindbergh goes on the radio again in June. June 15th is my note here. Of 1940, to talk about the French fall. He's driving home the lesson again, aren't you glad we're in the war? He says that he has the public with him at that point. Is that assertion on his point accurate?
It's hard to say. Public opinion polling wasn't as well developed as it would become, but I think it's a fairly accurate sentiment, especially when it turns out that France can hold out against the Germans only for 6 weeks. They held out against the Germans for 4 years the first time around, but in 6 weeks, the new strategy of Blitzkrieg takes them out. And Americans realize, oh boy, it's a good thing that we didn't have troops there, because they would have come in for the brunt of the punishment that the French did. And as the British flee back to their home island, Roosevelt is implored by the French And by Britain on behalf of the French, you have to give the French a promise that America will be there. And Roosevelt's not ready to do that at this point because he's waiting for public opinion to be better prepared. And he also wants to see if the Allied side, the French, they've given up, if the British are going to fight. And this is where Churchill comes in. And as you point out, he tries to manipulate Roosevelt. There's, on the one hand, he's saying, we will fight on the beaches, we will fight in the roads, we will fight everywhere, we will never surrender. But he's telling Roosevelt, well, you know, I might never surrender, but my government might fall. And the people who come after us, they might be forced to surrender. And so he says, basically, and so, Mr. President, you're going to have to deal with a very much worse situation if you let us go down. And by the way, we've got this fleet that if the Germans get their hands on, then America itself will be threatened. And so, dear Mr. President, please send us more weapons. And it works because Roosevelt just weeks later announces that he's going to send to Britain several dozen American destroyers that had been in mothballs that are going to help the British stave off the German attack.
The book is America First, Roosevelt versus Lindbergh in the Shadow of War. H.W. Brands is the author.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase